Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Callum Stoneman. Tech Talk is our chance to get together each week and explore what's going on in the world of technology from a blind and low vision perspective. We always love to hear from you, so if you want to get in contact with us, please do let us know what's working well, what's not working so well, and what's, somewhere a little bit in between. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, Hubert's recently taken a trip to London Paddington Station for a demo day of the Glide mobility device. So we'll hear how he got on. And also be hearing from Amos Miller, the CEO and founder of Glidance. David Hogg hears about the latest trials of the Give Vision headset. Plus, we'll be hearing about a new board game that showcases Braille. That's all to come this week. Joining us are regular co-hosts, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Hubert, we're going to be chatting about Glide a little bit later because I'm really interested in this, but anything else caught your attention this week?
Yeah, and you've tried Glide yourself as well, so it'll be interesting to hear. But a little bit of news for me, quite a small one, but quite significant for me. Finally, I don't know what's taken it so long to happen for this, but WhatsApp is now on the iPad, which for some may not be much, but for me, I am absolutely delighted, because when my phone's charging somewhere else, on the other end of the room, for example, and I'm just relaxing, listening to something, I like to be able to access it on another device. And now I've got that opportunity.
Yeah, I don't understand why this has taken so long. I didn't realise for a long time. I mean, I just assumed it would be there, because most apps, if they run on the iPhone, you can get them on the iPad as well.
You would think so.
But that was never the case with WhatsApp, was it?
No, and I don't understand why it's taken so long, because basically what they did is took the iPhone interface and redesigned it in a sense that you've got your list of chats on one side and your current conversation on the other.
Yeah, that iPad kind of split view thing that it does. Yeah.
Didn't think it would take so many years to do, but apparently, yeah.
I really like the desktop app for that, the WhatsApp app on Windows. That's really nice.
Yeah, I've used it once, I think, briefly, and I quite enjoyed it as well. I thought it was quite smooth to use, better than the web app on the Mac, which, ugh.
Oh, no. God, yeah.
No, dear, thank you. Too many unlabeled buttons, not the greatest focus, quite laggy. It just doesn't work that well.
I'd say that for apps in general, in my experience, that what you call like a thick app, so one that's actually downloaded onto your desktop, tends to work better than the online version. So I'm thinking of like Outlook here. I'm thinking of Slack, if anybody uses that, which is another messaging platform. So that doesn't surprise me. I've not personally tried WhatsApp on a laptop, but that doesn't surprise me.
I mean, I try to avoid web apps at all costs, just because I think they don't work as well, and it can be quite frustrating.
Me too. All right, well, there you go. If you've got an iPad, you can finally get WhatsApp on there. So give that a try if that interests you. Natalie, what's new with you?
A few different things this week. I went to a session on AI yesterday, and to be fair, it wasn't assistive technology or visual impairment specific, but there was some interesting stuff there. So one of the things was Notebook LM. Now, I think this is a paid thing, but what it does is aimed at learning. And what you do is you give it your resources, so your textbook or your worksheets or whatever it is that you're using to study, and you can ask it to do different things. And the demo I was at, they got it to create a podcast. And I think ChatGPT can do the same thing, because my little brother's tried it. But it was actually very good. So it was a podcast, and it had two AI voices, which actually sounded very realistic. And it discussed the material being given. In this case, it was a Wikipedia page on BBC Wales or something. So I didn't have a lot of material to work with. But I thought, if the software itself is accessible, or people have managed to get ChatGPT to work for them. I confess I've tried neither myself yet. How good would it be to be able to submit an inaccessible PDF and not just to have it read out by a screen reader in verbatim, but to be able to say, make this into a podcast, make it more interactive. And you could even then engage with the podcast host. So as though you're listening to a real radio show, you could stop it and ask it a question, say, oh, what do you think about this? Or how does this compare to that? And actually engage with it. And I thought, for anyone, that's a really cool tool. But I could see some particular benefits for the visual impairment community as well.
Yeah, me too. I haven't tried it, but some of the demos, very brief demos that I've heard about from that I've heard of the podcast it creates, it's kind of terrifying actually, because it's still, it's realistic.
It does sound scary. The fact that you can do something like this and it will create a podcast based on the information you feed it, I think it's fantastic on one hand, because for me, it would be a much easier way to absorb information than just read a document with a screen reader. But the fact that you can just throw a document at it and go, get two AI hosts and make a podcast about it, it sounds scary, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And the other piece of tech that was demoed yesterday was Google AI Studio. Now, classic caveat, it's only available in the US at the moment. But this was a similar one where you'd give it certain prompts and it would create a video animation. And I thought, actually, that has huge potential for the visual impairment world wanting to get into the creative arts, you know, to create your own films, videos, and then edit it. If somebody says to you, oh, I don't think that was quite what you're going for, you don't need to get them to edit it for you. You could do it yourself. And I find stuff like that really exciting.
I've never tried video generative AI, so that sounds quite interesting. I know, obviously, a lot of people have tried it to make anything from very serious videos to comedy videos, but I've never actually tried it.
The example shown was a video about a giant white bunny. So definitely aimed at kids, but I thought it's really exciting potential.
Yeah, interesting. Jackie, what have you got for us?
Well, I'm quite excited that Sony has released a new set of headphones. Everybody loves, well, I say everybody, but most people I know and the reviews are exceptional about the WH-1000 XM5 model that came out a couple of years ago. But lo and behold, the WH-1000 MX or XM6 model is now available to purchase. They're about 400 quid. So
my
they're not,
Lord.
Yeah, they're not cheap, but headphones are my thing, very much so. I love listening to music on headphones, and I like a really decent set of headphones. I do have the XM5s, and I am really looking forward to trying out the XM6 ones, because I'm a naughty girl, but I've bought them. So I will tell you what they're like. I think the one thing that I am looking forward to on these headphones, though, is the fold up. On the XM3s, they were a nice set of headphones that folded, and they were a good fold as well. You know, they weren't flimsy. But the XM5s, I think the 4s did, but I haven't seen the 4s, but the 5s. Definitely don't fold in the same way. You can adjust the headband, but you can't fold those. And the case that the XM5s come in is really quite bulky if you want to go out and travel with them, say on the bus or the train. So apparently they've gone back to the folding request on the XM6s. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what they're like and listening to them, because just headphones are my thing.
Pricey though, isn't it? I mean, Sony are a pretty premium brand, but I mean, I don't know. That's a bit much for headphones for me. I mean,
it's the equivalent of an iPhone.
Yeah.
I'd be curious what features they have that make them stand out for that sort of price tag.
I think the battery life is going to be the same on the six as they were on the fives. It's about 30 hours. You've got the noise cancelling feature. You can connect them to two devices simultaneously. I'm not sure why you'd want to do that, but you can. And I think just the speaker drivers and just the sound, all the blurb as you would expect, the manufacturer's blurb is all up there. These new shiny headphones, what they can do, very little about what they can't do. So yeah, I'll be just interested because I just love music. I love immersing myself in music, and I find the best way of doing that is through a decent set of headphones, and I'm just really, they're just my thing. I'm looking forward to it.
I feel you there, Jackie, and I'm wondering if you should start paying you commission because you're nearly selling them to me here. But I do wonder about noise cancelling. I'm not a fan of noise cancelling headphones, and maybe I'm being over paranoid or over dramatic, but I just kind of think if I can't see, it's really important that I do know what's going on around me. So
I
as
agree.
much as on a train or in a busy waiting room or wherever, I'd love to tune everybody else out entirely. I think for my own personal safety, I'm better not.
Yeah, I totally agree, Natalie. And if I'm going out with headphones, I don't have the noise cancelling feature turned on a bus because I like to hear, if there are any announcements or if something goes wrong, the bus breaks down, anything like that. And it has happened before. So I do totally agree. But if I'm safe and I'm in my comfy chair at home and I'm not going anywhere, then I do enjoy tuning everything out and listen to noise cancelling. But I totally agree with you. There's no way I'd walk around outside or be on a bus or anything and do that.
I do wonder if this is a blind thing because even in my own house, I don't like noise cancelling. I don't mind the adaptive mode on the AirPods. I find that's a nice balance, I think, even when out and about. Like if I'm walking around, I'll put the full transparency mode on. If
Yeah.
I'm sat on a bus or if I'm listening to music or a podcast or something while on a bus or on a train or something, I'll put on the adaptive one because I find that does a good job of like filtering things out. Not quite filtering them out, more just dulling them down a bit.
Yeah.
But even in my own house, I can't go to full noise cancelling. The minute that it shuts everything out, I'm just so like my head is just going, something's going on. There's an alarm
Yeah.
going off or something's happening.
Yeah.
Someone's trying to talk to me, even though I'm in on my own.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
can't do it.
Yeah, it's an interesting debate actually, because some people think that the actual sound that comes out of your headphones, is different with noise cancelling on. Some people don't like it turned on at all because they think it does change the sound of the music. I'm not sure it does that, but I am aware that there is a change definitely between tracks if you're listening to an album, and between tracks you can have that kind of wall of silence. It's like being in a really insulated room, if you like, which is obviously what it's meant to do. But it is interesting that, people moving around their homes or outside their homes or when they're traveling, that they, when they have no sight, particularly, that they have, they don't like the noise cancelling. So I'd be interested in what people think about the noise cancelling debate and whether, there are other listeners out there to this program who have headphones with noise cancelling and, all the bells and whistles. What do you think of that? Does that matter to you? Is there something that you'd prefer as a compromise, or do you just not like any headphones at all with noise cancelling on them?
Let us know what you think and let us know how you get on with those headphones as well when you get them. Well, I've been looking into a better reminders app this week than the iOS reminders app because I just find it a little bit clunky. And I found this isn't new. I've known about this for quite a while, but I've never actually used it. There's one called Todoist. So that's Todoist. IST. And one thing I really like about it is it's really accessible. It takes natural language. So if you've got a task, if you put, if I wrote in something like reply to tech talk email tomorrow 9 a.m, it wouldn't put tomorrow 9 a.m. in the task name. Instead, it would take that and actually set it to, like, set the due date and the reminder to tomorrow at 9 a.m. And you can have different projects on there, which are essentially folders. So I've got, like, home, work, and tech talk. They're the three that I've set up for now. And again, within the task name, you can go through and do this manually if you want. But again, within the task name, if I put a hashtag and then the name of the project, it will automatically move it to that project or to that folder. It's really nice, just really efficient. It's so much easier than going through that kind of date picker thing and then, you know, swiping up and swiping around to select the date and then swiping around to select the hour and minute. I'm impressed so far. It's way easier than the iOS app, the built-in one.
You have to pay for that, Callum. That sounds really good.
There's a free version which has most of the features. I mean, I'm only looking for something fairly basic, to be fair. But then the paid version has, there's like a subscription for it, again. But that has a few other features. So you can set like reminder dates, but also like due dates separately. You can set durations. So you can put on there how long a task is going to take and it will kind of optimize that. I think you can customize like your view a little bit. So yeah, there's a couple of different options for it. But yeah, I'm just using the free one at the minute and that seems to work for what I need. Okay, well, another interesting week coming up, hopefully. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk. Let's head over to London Paddington Station now and find out how Hubert got on when he had a demo of the Glide mobility device.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and I am here with Kyle from Glidance.
Hello.
And Kyle, we're going to do the demo.
We are.
Let's take a look at it.
All right. So I've got in front of you our Alpha 1.6 device. Mm-hmm. This has a pretty new version of software. So this is going to be trying to do line maintenance for us, keep us going in a straight line while avoiding obstacles and coming back onto that line. You'll notice there's a kind of exposed PCB in the grip with three buttons.
Yes.
So the way that you use those buttons, the middle one will kind of cancel out any turns and try to keep you going in a straight line the direction that you're pointed. If you want to make a right or a left turn, you can click the right or the left button, and it'll try to make the next available turn to the left.
So to the right. Is this the button?
That's correct. Right?
And, yep. And there's one
in, and there's one in the middle.
Aha.
Exactly.
And are they press buttons? Or
they're press buttons. Okay. So as we get it in position, we'll put it down at an angle.
Oh, it's vibrating.
Yep, so there's haptics at the top. And Hubert, I might ask that you try it with your right hand, just to break some of your muscle memory. It's a little bit different in how you hold it and how you interact. So
okay, just all I'm saying is it's because I'm left-handed. So.
Oh, you are left-handed?
Yes, but it's, if needed, I can try with a left hand.
Let's whatever you're most comfortable with to start.
Left hand would be better.
Okay, no problem. So just make sure that you're kind of following the device, that it's out in front, not to your side. So just make sure that it's out kind of in front of you. Use a nice loose grip.
Yep.
And then we'll click the middle button to kind of cancel anything out. All right, and then you can go ahead and start to walk.
Okay. So currently walking with it, and what is it currently doing as we are walking?
It's essentially going to try to avoid obstacles.
It's currently...
Sorry.
It's currently taking us to the left, which is about
to take
mentioned.
Us around to the left. So one of the things that we're working on is actually understanding which side of the device you're on. Because right now it avoided this pillar. If you reach out your hand,
mm-hmm. There's a pillar.
But you would have actually run into that because it wasn't leaving enough space to the right of the device.
So what is that a device problem? Or is that something I could have
done? Nope, that's a device problem. So that's something that we are working on. Mm-hmm. So you can go ahead and start to walk again. We'll try to make it around that pillar. There we go. And then we'll head down this hallway.
It's walked into a barrier now.
Let me make sure that it's reacting properly. 1 second. Yeah, I think what we need to do is just go a little bit more slowly. I think it's just not reacting fast enough.
Am I too fast for it?
Yep, at the moment. Yeah. We're working on a much higher top speed, but it's just simply not as reactive as it needs to be right
now. I'm more concerned about this barrier to the side.
Yeah, there's a whole group of people that is putting on the brakes to try to not run into. Okay, so now you should be okay.
Okay. Let's go ahead and let's begin to walk again.
And you want to make sure that it's out in front. If it's to your side, it'll actually start reacting to your body as well.
So I'm walking currently.
Yeah, so it's actually, it went around a pillar to the other side because there was just no space with all the...
That's good though. Traffic. It's learned, it's analyzed the environment and mm-hmm. It actually took me the right way around.
Yep.
unlike walking me into it last time. It's currently turning us.
So this hallway kind of sneaks around to the left, so we should open up into this corridor here. Put on the brakes. Somebody walked right in front of us there.
Ah, that's quite good that we did stop, which is quite handy, rather than kind of carry on going plowing into the...
Right. You know. And as soon as it opens up, it'll release the brakes. You can just continue. So this might be a position where it's kind of the brakes turn on and off a lot to try to avoid these people coming at us.
But the good thing is it does put the brakes on if needed. So it's currently...
Parting of the seas. We're rocking right into the crowd here.
Currently walking. The crowd has parted. Thank you very much. The device is currently leading, and it's pulled the brakes
on
the brakes.
You feel those again?
Yep. So why did it stop this time?
Little Earl just walked right in front of it.
Okay, let's see if we can walk again. We can indeed. We carry on walking. It's doing a great job so far. It doesn't feel hard to push either. It's quite a gentle motion. A lot of it is done yourself, so you can actually relax. And it's currently taking us somewhere else.
Just around a couple that was kind of pulled off to the cyber.
Fantastic.
And now we're kind of shorelining against the left side of the wall.
Mm-hmm.
It'll probably hit the brakes. Let us through. Okay.
Well, a very good job at kind of doing zigzags around people and obstacles.
Now, if we want to make a U-turn, you can click the right button.
Okay.
And as you walk, it'll make a right turn. Then you can click it again. And then it'll get us going the other way. Oh, there's the brakes.
Oh, it's pulled me back, actually.
Yeah, it has a little bit of a reverse when it puts on the brakes and there's not space. If there's no space to continue moving forward or turning, it'll back up with just a time zone.
That's quite clever. Right, should we carry on?
Yep. Click the right turn button one more time. There we go.
That's
right. Headed back
to go. It's
way.
Done a U-turn. We are returning. See how it does this time round. It's just avoided an obstacle because I could nearly feel walking into something, but I didn't. It's quite a nice night motion as we walk. Well, apart from interesting members of the public, it's doing quite a good job at avoiding what it can. It's now avoiding something else.
There's that left turn bug we were talking about.
Yes, so it's now trying to neft us to...
Yeah, it's found the bathrooms, basically.
Useful as it is, we don't need at the moment. So what would your advice?
So I would say pick the device up, turn to your right, set it back down, and then click the middle button, and that'll kind of reset the line going that way.
So that bug is being worked on.
Correct. Okay. Yep. That's a bug we have kind of in open space, where it tries to find a shoreline to the left.
I think that's kind of what low vision bed people do with a cane, to be fair.
Might need to slow down just a tiny bit, just so it has time to react.
Yeah, I think my walking speed is too fast for the poor thing.
Yeah, and we'll get there eventually.
Oh yeah, it's still prototype, so you know, you have to be. It's doing a very good job so far, despite navigating it pretty well. So has it got a route mapped out, or is it working on what it can see?
It's basically just trying to find open space. Yeah. So the hallway turns to the right. So at this point, we'd want to make a right turn. We essentially walked ourselves into a corner that time. It's a little bit more space. Yep. And sometimes you kind of need to help the device by kind of aiming it in that direction.
There you can probably work out without you're in a corner. So do you have to map out routes when you actually use the device, or can you rely on it?
So this is what we call freestyle mode. So in this mode, where really all it's doing is avoiding obstacles and try to keep us going in a line, this is where you would have control over the route and the turns. And the device is just trying to keep us safe along the way. From there, as we release new features and new software updates over the air, we'll start to bake in, you know, guided, directed navigation with map input and things like that, where you could say, guidance, take me to the nearest bank ATM or take me to the nearest Starbucks or something of that nature.
Would it like a guide dog stop at curbs so you don't fall off them?
Yes, it does have a curb and what we call cliff detection using the downward facing camera. And it can identify also like curb cuts and steps. And it will treat those as obstacles unless you actually ask for it as a target. For example, glide, find the stairs going down, at which point it will treat it as a target. It will walk you up to the steps, put on the brakes, and let you know that it has arrived, and then which side the handrail is on.
It stopped?
Yeah, somebody walked right in front of us. So we're kind of out in the big open space here in Paddington.
To be honest, with these sorts of spaces, it does a very good job, considering it's not easy for it to navigate such a ever-changing environment.
It's definitely, and this is really the first demo day where we've been out in the open in a public space like this, so we're learning as well.
Those turning us left and right into a barrier. Which way do we need to go now?
So we'll go left. If you want to click the left button.
Left button.
We'll make a left turn. Here we go. It's going to take us around ticket counter thing here.
That's a very good job of that.
Click right. We'll head right.
Right. There we go. Button
now at
pressed.
This point, we can go straight. So you can kind of... Oh. Took us around a little bit too far.
Okay. What do we do now?
Well, let's get going that way. Click the middle button, and then we'll try to see if we can make it back to the group.
Turning us back around.
Oh, sorry. We're back here to the left. And we're almost back.
What do I do this way?
Yep.
Turn the device a little bit. Helped it, as it were.
All right.
To get us back.
And then we're back.
To the group.
So, Hubert, you got a demo of Glide in the real world, in London Paddington. What did you reckon? What did you make of it?
It was interesting because, I mean, one, it's fantastic to get it in a live environment like an incredibly busy London Paddington station, which if you've never been to it, it's a fun adventure. you could get all sorts there. It's huge. However, I came into this with a bit of pessimism because I wasn't sure what these devices are like. I've never used them, but I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised. It was really good, I thought it was fantastic, to be honest. Being able to use it, and it didn't feel exhausting. It felt like a nice gentle push, like you were gliding almost. And bearing in mind it was in a live environment, which was chaotic as anything, it did a very good job. I was very impressed with it. How did you find it when you did it in a bit of a different setting in Manchester?
Yeah, so I had a demo day a couple of weeks ago, and mine was a bit more controlled, I guess, because the demo day that I had was at the Guide Dogs Centre in Manchester. And what they did was they just had it guide us around. They've got a little obstacle course that they use for training the dogs there anyway. So it's just like it's quite a big room, and there's just a few traffic cones and, you know, just general stuff. I think there's a couple of chairs, you know, just general stuff that the dog might need to guide you around. But in this case, they got Glide to guide us around it. And I was really impressed. Like, I was really impressed by the feel of it. It was a lot lighter than I was expecting. Because I thought you would have to kind of push it, you know, like push it with you. But you don't. You just give it a little nudge almost to tell you that you want to go forward. And it's hard to describe it. It really does just kind of go with you. So I was kind of walking a little bit slow at first, and then I thought, right, I'll just speed up and see what it does. And again, I didn't have to push it. I didn't have to put any pressure on it. I just started walking a bit faster, and it just went. It just kept up, and same with slowing down as well. So I was impressed by that. I still feel like I need to see it in the real world, though. Like, I still don't feel... That's all well and good, going around an obstacle course, and we only got like 2 minutes with it because it was very busy. I've never seen the Guide Dog Centre so packed, actually. Like, there's a lot of demand for this. But I mean, it was good. I'm impressed. I haven't gone out and pre-ordered the device yet, but someone who has is Jackie Brown. Because obviously this isn't out yet. It's still in like the prototype phase. I'm interested what sold you on it.
Well, actually, I'm going to pass this to my husband. I'm going to blame him because he was very taken with Glide when he read all about it and what they were trying to do. And he went to a couple of the online, you know, tutorials about it. And he was really, really, he thought that of all the mobility aids that have been out and are coming up, he felt that Glide seemed to be the most sensible in the fact that it's at ground level. I think for Martin, and I suppose I get where he's coming from, it's okay having something on your shoulders or having something on your wrist, having something, you know, on your person, but to actually have something at ground level where you are walking around and it's actually guiding you, if you like. It's gliding around with you. It's at that level that you really need to know where there are curbs coming up, where there is a post in front of you. And I think that kind of sold it for him. So he just decided to go for it, you know, when it was cheaper at that time to pre-order. And so far, yes, the launch date has been put back To next year, but we fully expected that to happen anyway. We never thought at the onset that it was going to be released in September this year, when there was a lot of talk about it right at the beginning, because these things just very rarely ever do launch on time. There is always, especially with something like the Glidance, where that company has, you know, they've got a lot of stuff to deal with: the prototype, the manufacturing, the cost, all the partners that they're working with. It was inevitable that it would be delayed. So we accept that. But I'm really interested to and I'm looking forward to, you know, to seeing what it's like. I haven't seen it in person yet. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing it. But I still can't get my head around it properly yet. I of all the things I've heard and all the plaudits that it's received, I still can't get my head around it quite yet, in how it's going to pan out to walk outside with it instead of using a cane. I think that there is something a bit scary about that. But I'm going to have it, because obviously we've just ordered the one between us, and Martin says, I want you to go out and use it. You know, if you want to borrow it and I'm not going anywhere, use it. That's what it's for. But we, you know, we're looking forward to it with a little bit of trepidation, maybe.
I think I know what you mean, Jackie, about sort of putting your trust in this device, and it is very cool and exciting. But I was thinking that just on a really primal level, there's something reassuring for at least a cane user about going outside when you can't see and literally waving a giant metal stick around to check what's in front of you.
Yeah, because yeah, there is.
Even if you didn't have a cane, or if you're not visually impaired and you're in the dark, or your sight goes temporarily for some reason, the most likely thing you are to do is to stick your hands out in front of you, or potentially grab a stick, another object, to give you that reach. So on a primal level, the cane is reassuring. And I suppose for guide dog users, the dogs have been a man's best friend for a very long time. So it provides a similar kind of reassurance, just in a different way. Whereas taking this device that you don't swish in front of you, that is just held out and is electronic, You're putting a lot of trust in this, so I understand why you're a bit nervous of that.
I am a little bit, yeah, but I'm nervous in an excited way, because I want to see how I've got this kind of imagination of what it's like, because I don't have any sight at all. I haven't seen any pictures or any live demos. I've only heard everything so far. So it is an excitement, but it's I suppose in a way, when you walk about with a guide dog, and I've had a guide dog before, you kind of, you know that the dog is a living thing, and it is going to actually hopefully go where you've instructed it to go, or starts walking, and hopefully it's going to guide you around things. But with this, you're putting your trust in something that is, after when all said and done, it is a sort of a tool. It's a kind of almost like a robotic thing. So I think, and even when I had my guide dog working, I always carried a cane in my backpack, because I just felt, particularly with Bumble, bless her, I always felt that, you know, I needed to have a cane to keep me right, with maybe following a path or something like that. She did have her own tendencies, let's put it that way. So I think even with Glide, I think I still would go out with a cane, just have a cane there just in case something went wrong, the battery went flat, or I don't know, something happened to it, it just gave up the ghost, and then where would I be? So I'll not be giving up my cane in a hurry, that's for sure.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
The company Give Vision are looking at ways to make live football matches more accessible to people with low vision. But how exactly does the Give Vision headset work? David Hogg has been finding out more.
Today we're joined by Joanna Lidington, Head of Operations at Give Vision, to discuss the Give Vision headset, a wearable device to make stadiums and arenas more accessible for blind and partially sighted fans. We're also joined by Richard Dedman, a user of the Give Vision headset. Both of you, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Hi.
Hey.
So, Joanna, coming to you first, can you give us a brief overview of the headset itself, please, and some of the uses for it?
So the headset itself can be used in a couple of different ways. It has a camera on it, so the wearer can look at whatever they'd like to look at around the stadium, and it also connects in with the TV cameras around the pitch. So the user gets the live stream of what's going on the match in real time to the headset. You can also manipulate the headset to suit your sight loss. Let's say you are photosensitive, you can turn and make it darker. You can change the contrast, you know, really highlight that white ball on the green background as much as possible. And we found that this gives people using the headset a lot of different options, but it also does mean that the users get VAR, which is definitely a fan favorite for using the headset.
Richard, coming to you now, can you tell us a little bit about your sight loss, please, and how you got involved with the headset?
My sight loss, I've got diabetic retinopathy, so I'm registered as partially sighted. Got next to no vision in one of my eyes, and then the other eye is pretty good centrally. In terms of Give Vision and the headsets, I was invited by Chelsea Football Club, which is my team, I'm a season ticket holder there, to possibly trial the Give Vision headsets to see help or support me with obviously watching a football game at Chelsea.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you've been a season ticket holder for a long, long time, and that's kind of coincided with your sight loss. How did you find initially using the headset and getting that love of football, watching live football back?
Yeah, well, as I say, I've been a season ticket holder for 22 years now. So yeah, definitely some time. And I was getting to a point where things were becoming extremely difficult watching games where I sit at Chelsea. I'm behind one of the goals. So certainly the goal this end is viewable and I can definitely enjoy football. But trying to watch football at the other end is somewhat difficult. So the goal mouth is near on impossible for me to see at times. And having the opportunity to trial the headsets and give those a go has just been fantastic. I mean, I've been able to follow the game and actually see what's going on with the ball. I can follow the ball. I do zoom in on a lot of the action so I can follow it sort of from left to right and across the field. But I think that I most enjoy on the headsets is the live broadcast mode, because if you're watching a game, you often do miss things, and to be able to then watch a replay back, it's just amazing. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it really gives you that extra dimension to watching the game. You know, particularly we've mentioned VAR already, but something that's happened in just the blink of an eye, it gives you another chance to go back and go over it.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, you know, you can, if there's a penalty incident or something that's happened up the other end, you know, the live broadcast mode will give you that live feed, so you can then just revert to that and be able to watch a replay back. So, you know, all of the things that people are watching at home on the telly, you essentially can be watching there within the atmosphere of the game and be able to follow it. And yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. It really is game changing.
Joanna, coming back to you a bit more on the live broadcast feature of the Give Vision headset, does that require a subscription to the broadcaster of the game, and how is that getting implemented into the game in the ground?
So at every stadium, broadcasters obviously come along for the matches, but you already have the feed being directed around areas of the stadium already. So if you're lucky enough to have been in hospitality, you'll see a lot of the TV screens inside the boxes have the feed of what's going on in the match. You also will often have it on the big screen in the bowl. So what we're doing is we're taking that same feed, so the feed that's already going out to the stadium, but we're taking it at an earlier point is probably the best way to describe it. So there's no delay. I know that people who've experienced those boxes will know that there is a bit of a delay on those screens. So you hear kind of everyone in the stadium cheering, and then in the box, you see the goal happen a few seconds later. But we have no delay like that.
Richard, my final question for you is, you've sung the praises of the Give Vision headset. Would you recommend this to other blind or partially sighted football fans or fans of, say, gigs or whatever a live event that it could support?
Definitely. Certainly, if you were ever considering going to a football game with a visual impairment, or if you were considering not continuing going due to, you know, your sight loss, then these headsets will give you that opportunity to at least be able to, you know, see something or at least be a part of the atmosphere of it. I think, yeah, I mean, I was on the brink of not continuing to go to football because of how things were becoming at football. But now with the headset, you know, I would certainly continue going. And, you know, I can actually see things sometimes better than my sighted father down the other end. So he's who comes with me. You know, he'll sometimes say, did the goalkeeper get a hand to that? And you're like, yeah, he did. You know, and that's where I just think they really are fantastic. And yeah, I mean, certainly for other events, well, why not? You know, why can't these be used in the theatre or concerts, that kind of thing? Certainly, yeah. I mean, I would happily recommend the headsets because I think they would be good for all, you know, live events as such.
And Joanna, if our listeners want to find out more about the Give Vision headset, then where can they go?
So I recommend anyone who wants to learn more about the headset can come to givevision.net. That's our website. We're also on all the standard social medias under Give Vision. You could also approach your local team and ask them if it's something they're aware of, because we are connected with most clubs, so they should already be able to put you in touch with us directly.
Brilliant stuff. Well, Joanna Littleton, Head of Operations at Give Vision, and Richard Dedman, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We now go back to London Paddington Station and the Clyde Demo Day as Hubert catches up with Glidant's CEO and co-founder Amos Miller.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and we are here at London Paddington Station where a demo of Glyde has been taking place, where a lot of blind and partially sighted people got to get their hands on this exciting device. And joining me now is Amos Miller, co-founder and CEO of Glidant. Amos, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Hubert. Wonderful to be here. Thank you for coming.
So, for people that haven't been following or that don't know what Glyde is, can you give us a brief summary of what it is?
Glyde is a primary mobility aid. It's effectively a personal robot that designed to provide us blind people with another option as alongside our cane and our guide dogs. And the way that it works, think of it as a long handle, two wheels at the end of the handle on the ground. You push the device, and as you begin to walk, Glyde autonomously steers the way, steering a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, guiding you around obstacles, helping you find things in the environment. And really, I think for the first time, providing another option for us to use as a mobility aid.
So today we have got to see one of the most recent prototypes. Can you tell us what's changed with the version we have just seen compared to the last version that people got to give a go?
In the version that people have been demoing over the last 4 or 5 months, the device was fairly reactive to the environment. So it basically kept you safe, avoiding obstacles, keeping... shorelining to walls. But what we found is that if you veered off or if you decided to go in a different direction intentionally or unintentionally, you might lose orientation. And so what we've done now with Glyde is implemented what we call line maintenance, where Glyde maintains a line. So if there's an obstacle, it guides you around that obstacle, but it comes back to the line that it was on. And then you can take very intentional turns using the buttons in the handle. So if you're walking along a sidewalk, a pavement, and you want to turn left, you click the left button, and then as the sidewalk opens up, it will take that turn. But it's a very intentional input rather than sort of letting the device do its thing.
You mentioned the straight line principle, which is quite a comfortable and quite a familiar term for guide dog users, because then people who are familiar with guide dogs will have the same familiarity
with the use of Glide. So you've had the demos of this prototype quite a few times now with various people around the world. What sort of feedback have you received about this current version compared to the previous versions?
Well, I would say that actually the current version has only been, I think, demoed for about a week now. Last week, it was the folks that have had a chance to use it last week in Glasgow and Liverpool and Manchester experienced the line maintenance, the straight line principle, but they didn't have the buttons. And today is really the first time that we're giving people the opportunity to really take those initiate turns, which you yourself experienced, right, Hubert?
Yes, and I found these buttons quite helpful because it was kind of a nice level where you can let Glide guide you, but you've also got that level of control that if you know you want to make a turn, you can do so. So it's That's kind right. of a nice in-between sort of balance.
Yeah.
What other particular favorites when it comes to functions have people had when they tested the current version?
I think what people are really enjoying with the current approach to the steering is how smooth it is. That you walk, the turns that it makes are much more determined and much smoother. The device is planning ahead, and also the brakes. When here we're testing it in Paddington, and obviously there's people running around in all directions, and somebody walks in front of you, it kind of slows down and put the brakes on, and then you can wait for a moment to have them get out of the way, or just pause a moment and Glide will find an alternative path and guide you on it. So that's something that people have responded to very much.
I did like the brakes because it wasn't sudden. Like, what I hate is when someone's guiding you and because of obstacles they are forced to stop suddenly and you end up, you know, headbutting them. But what I like about Glide is it's stopped slowly, quickly enough that you have to stop, but slowly enough that you won't kind of fall over or knock the device, which I enjoy.
And we try to avoid the brakes as much as possible, and Glide is always looking for a path to guide you on. I was actually showing my team members how when we with a guide dog, if the guide dog stops, the thing to do with the guide dog is to take a step back and give it space to figure out a path to go and give it the space to do so. And we do a very similar thing with Glide itself, to give, because it's looking for that path. Give it the space, give it a bit of movement, and it'll find that path for you.
When it comes to suggestions for improvements, any particular improvement suggestions that stood out to you that you may look at implementing in future versions?
Our first goal is for Glide to become a viable mobility aid, right? A viable mobility aid means, and the kind of the test or the measure that we use is, are you able to do your existing routes, the things that you do today, with Glide as your mobility aid and leave your existing mobility aid behind? Okay, and to do that, it's all about freestyle navigation. Freestyle navigation is effectively line maintenance, turns, and targeting of targets in the environment that you can get to them, and that's what we are working on and tuning and working on, really, like you said, smooth guidance, clear turns, and helping you to detect those targets in the environment, doors and escalators and steps and all of those aspects. Into that, we're taking a lot of input and the feedback that we're getting around. Like, I'm really excited today to see what people make about of the steering using the buttons. That's something that we are really leaning into right now, that user experience, the interaction. When is it a turn that I've initiated? Now Glide is taking a turn. Is it going in the way that I wanted it to go? And all of those kind of interactions. People do talk about maps, and that's something that we are working towards. I think maps are going to be very important, but we need to get to Glide being a viable mobility aid first, and that's why I'm focused on freestyle navigation. People want to understand why Glide is doing things. And I think that's particularly important for people who have used a cane before and are used to getting more feedback from the environment. So you stopped. Why did you stop? You turned left. Why did you turn? You turned right. Why did you turn? Yeah, you're slowing down. Why are you slowing down? What's going on around here? So I think that there's really going to be really interesting consideration, maybe using voice to almost have a setting where you get the sort of a blow-by-blow narrative of what's going on, and then over time you'll turn that down. I definitely think that the transition from the cane to a glide for some folks is we just need to understand that transition better. It's clear that people who have used the guide dog before are very used to that kind of navigation.
I think it's quite important because once the device can tell you why it did what it did, it will enable you, like you say, to trust the device more over time, which I think is essential. Yeah. Now, I want to ask you about possible pre-orders. You know, we've had this before where people could place a pre-order at a discounted price and get their device when it's ready. Is there hope to do more pre-orders in the near future?
Yes, we will reopen pre-orders. We haven't announced the program yet, but we will come back to accepting pre-orders. In the meantime, the best thing is just to register with us so that you get informed when that happens. The general reason why we have not continued pre-orders is because we really want what we internally call a controlled rollout, as in we want to make sure that the first group of people who receive the device, we understand exactly the kind of support they need to be successful. We understand any teething problems. And it's just feels too much to just have thousands of people waiting to receive the device on a certain month when we haven't done the first 100.
And if people would like to sign up in order to get updates from Glidance and to know where then pre-orders will come, or maybe when more demo days might be, where can they go to do that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we do. So glidance.io is our website, glidance.io. And you just register there, put your name, email address. You'll be invited to one of our Zoom calls where we walk you through everything start to finish about the company and the device and everything, and then you'd be receiving our newsletters, invitations to Zoom calls that we have every month that people can join, and also the announcements of demo days, pre-orders, and everything that comes with that.
Fantastic. Amos Miller, co-founder and CEO of Glidance. Thank you very much for joining us here at London Paddington Station here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Tim has been an RNIB technology volunteer for 20 years, helping blind and partially sighted people to use technology for independent living, accessing information and expressing themselves. He's here today to tell us about his experience of volunteering and some of his favourite moments. Hi Tim, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi.
So what first prompted you to begin volunteering for the Tech for Life team?
My father was a talking book volunteer, and I used to accompany him on visits as a child and teenager, sort of helping or maybe just accompanying to people's houses and seeing what he did. And I thought, you know, I could give something back, and it was something I could carry on with. I didn't really have much technology skills, and not as good as my father, really, I would say. Even though I'm younger, I would say he still knows more. I just used to, you know, it was mainly visiting people's houses, chatting to them and finding what the problem was. It wasn't too technical, and I could always ask my dad in the early days for any questions. So I just learned on the job.
And what have been some of your favourite moments in your time as a volunteer so far?
In the early days, we used to have meetings. There used to be a local organiser, and he used to have an annual kind of party at his house and would have a little chat. All the men, and it was men, unfortunately, went into a room. We had a kind of meeting, and then we had drinks and food, and it was a bit social. Then we had an era where we had a few students. Maybe that was about 8 years ago. And I used to go around with one or other of them, and it was good because they were better technically than me, but I was better with transport, finding places. So we're a good team. Unfortunately, the student supply dried up, but that was a fun era. That was great. Another thing I remember, I came round to fix a man's computer in Sunderland. I couldn't fix it, and I felt a bit guilty for coming all the way there. So I walked his dog instead. I'm sure he was happy with that.
And obviously, technology has changed a lot in the last 20 years. What have been some of the biggest changes to your role?
Well, the job's changed over the years. It used to be the old talking book players, like a tape recorder, but they'd virtually gone even when I started. Then it was CD players with like a book on a CD. That was the main job. And now it's mainly computers. It's mainly doing Windows updates, doing accessible, like speaking computers and all sorts of things. But I've done random things, like I've done a couple of talking clocks and watches. I always like them interesting jobs, and even a Braille typewriter I've had a go at fixing. But we don't really expect that kind of stuff. We'll just see what we'll get when we get to the person's house, really, sometimes.
What's some of the best feedback you've gotten from someone you've supported?
I don't know, really. Just that we've fixed their device and they're able to read or enjoy music, a book or whatever, and rather than just stare into space, you know, and they've got nothing to do. They're just happy that, you know, they can continue with their life.
And why would you encourage other people to consider volunteering?
Just, it's a worthwhile thing. It doesn't take much of your time, and you're looked after by the RNIB. So certainly I could imagine another 20 years on this, hopefully anyway.
Well, thank you so much, Tim, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio, and a huge congratulations on reaching this milestone.
Thank you for having me today.
That's just about all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much for being with us and for tuning in. If you want to get in touch with us, as always, emails and voice messages, always welcome. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. We'll be back same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
See you next week.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.